is I'd like to welcome our ex officio member, Lisa Evans, who actually made it today. And and you're on time. May it be shown in the minutes that she's on time and not 10 minutes late like the last minutes showed.
For Laura. Yeah, she's going to say, I wasn't here the last
one. I know.
Laura, she didn't make it.
Yeah, it did. It showed up in the minutes. Okay, so, so first of all, I guess we go for an approval of the agenda. I need a motion to approve the current agenda.
So moved.
Any discussion on that? Or wish to have additions? Nope. Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, so approval of the minutes. We were sent the minutes of our last Board of Health meeting. I personally looked through those. I thought they looked fine to me. Does anyone have any corrections at all?
No.
Okay, I need a motion to approve. Any further discussion? Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Very good. Now, public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Anyone present? Nope. Okay. We'll move on to the next one. Consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. And the motion in front of us is the consideration of contract between Iowa Department of Health and Story County Board of Health for intervention, implementation, and target populations effective March 1st, 2019 to June 29th, 2023. So, I need a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just have a clarifying question.
Please.
So it looks like this is all federal money, so it's just a pass-through to directing to the entity. There's no state money in there. So is this an entity that has received this grant in the past, or is this an all-new grant?
I didn't have...
I'll talk about it when I...
when you get to it?
Yeah, okay.
That's perfect. Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Great. Okay, so, okay, thanks. Okay, any other questions at all? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, and so it passes. Now we go to additional items. Discussion and consideration of indoor tanning bed ordinance.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming, everybody. So, I know
we all know who you are, but could you...
Margaret James, Story County Environmental Health. Okay. So, as you all know, the state is no longer offering a contract to do the tanning bed inspections, okay? And so the Board of Health, you guys, advised us to come up with possibly our own ordinance for enforcing tanning bed regulations. And so... before you have a couple examples of Minnesota's regulations and Utah's regulations. There's not a whole lot out there to look at. And then also, in the past, we've been using Iowa's. Now, Lisa just mentioned that you've worked on this actual legislation. Is that correct?
In my prior role, yes, I have.
Okay. And so it's interesting because, you know, the department, of public health is required to do several things, but because they don't have the money, they're just not going to do it, I guess, is what they, I've been told by Angela Leek, who is the department, the bureau chief over there. So that being said, we still don't know if they're going to do the licensing of it and the fee collection and that kind of thing for it. But that's a small part of their job or our job if we were to take it over, I believe. So if they do it or if we do it, that part doesn't matter, but enforcing and inspecting would fall on us. And so we would have to adopt an ordinance before we do that. So pretty much keeping with the same regulations and maybe trimmed down version of what they have, because they talk about fee collections and this and that, and we don't go into that much detail in the other ordinances, like the septic and the well and things like that, or fines for being late on your payments, things like that. So I thought maybe we would cross some of that amount. But the only big thing that we thought we would add to it is requiring the permission from a legal guardian for someone younger than 18 years old to participate in tanning. So that is something that we need direction from the Board of Health to tell us if you want to keep it as is, as the Iowa requires, and there's no limitation on age, or add that restriction.
My opinion is that's a very reasonable thing to add to it, that if they're under 18, because there are health consequences to it, and so, and things that they have to deal with in the future. And so I think a parent should have to sign off before they let their teenager tan for time under one of those.
Okay. And there is an example, I believe, in the Utah one, and maybe, Kathy, in the Minnesota one, well, as well, just some of the verbiage that they used restricting it and how they went about doing that. So we can, for probably the next meeting or maybe not till 2020, have that written up. We'll just basically adopt a lot of the Iowa wording and then add that 18-year-old restriction and go from there. So if
people take thoughts. A vote. Does anyone else have any other thoughts?
No, I agree, yeah.
Okay, can I have a motion then for that?
Yeah, can I ask a question? Yeah. First of all, I didn't get a chance to read the Minnesota statutes. I read the ones from Utah because that got sent to us. So you're talking about that the state may collect the licensing fee, but we would be responsible for doing the inspection?
Well, the way it worked before, and that was written into the code, was that the state would keep a list of the licensed folks and then renew it annually and then let the local boards of health know that list. So they collect the $5 fee for licensing, let us know who's licensed, and then we, as per the contract, then we would enforce the regulations. The problem with that, of course, is they have to notify us if they haven't renewed their license, and there's been a large time gap, and they're just not staffed. So that there's a real disconnect with that. In the perfect world, we would do the licensing and the enforcement, but the way it's written, I don't think we can at this point. Now, Angela Leake said that they might revisit and come up with something different or slash this a little bit just because they don't have the funding to do this program. I personally don't see how they can get off the hook from carrying out their responsibilities just because they don't have the money.
Would we get a fee for doing our inspections?
We would.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep, and that's the amount that to charge is written out in the Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Iowa Administrative Code. It's written out in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want a motion right now to approve the addition of that if someone's under 18, they have to get a parent's permission to do it. And then the next step will be for you to bring a finished ordinance to us.
Correct.
And then we would approve it.
Yes.
And then what would happen after that? Would it have to go to the Board of Supervisors?
Yes.
Okay. Because we're just an advising consent board.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So
okay. Second. Okay. Any further discussion or questions?
So I just have a question. So the proposal, though, doesn't line up necessarily with what Iowa code has, in that you have to do that someone under 18 would have to get parents' permission. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So just so that we're aware of that, that someone could certainly challenge the ordinance, but hopefully
that the state would just take off and agree with it.
And usually if the state doesn't want us doing something more stringent, it's specifically written that home rule has been taken away.
Right, so if you're familiar with,
I mean, if you know of anything
No, I don't. I think it's a good ordinance and stuff, because I certainly think we need to look at the protections, and I've known of young women who have, you know, tanned and have gotten infections and everything else from it, and then their parents kind of find out a little bit later, you know, kind of what had been going on. So I think it's a good idea to have it signed off. I just want us to just, we'll just have to be kind of watchful.
That's a good
point.
If
the state does anything or not. I'm not saying we cannot do it. I just, we'll just have to be mindful and be advocates.
That's a good idea. I'll run our proposed ordinance to Angela Lee. Do you know her? Or
probably.
Bureau head? You probably do. Yeah. Yep.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Any other questions at all? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Okay.
Thank you
very much. You know, I always kind of thought that our role in the Board of Health is to give a standard about what we feel should be the best thing that happens. And even if it doesn't happen or can't legally, we should still go on record as saying this is what the way it should be. And I think adding that about Lesson 18 is a really good idea.
I would agree.
Okay. So, agency and departmental reports, Story County Public Health.
S. White, Story County Public Health.
Teresa Ferrari, Story County Public Health.
I just wanted to give you an update in relationship to, as some of you know, the Iowa Department of Public Health requires that county public health department to do a needs assessment, a community needs assessment, every 5 years. So our next community needs assessment is due in 2020. So I wanted to share with you that I've already started that process. I work with a group, Story County Quality Living Alliance, which represents different agencies throughout Story County. And we've began our process, and our focus this year will be, what are the most important health and human service needs of the people of Story County and why? So where we're beginning the process is looking at data that already exists. So there is data out there in the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation or American Community Survey, those types of things. And I have an ISU professor that's going to be helping us with the data, Les Miller, and helping us put that together. Then we have another component that we are going to be actually going out and we started kind of interviewing with other human services group. We sent a letter asking them what kind of data do they collect, and what we asked them this question. And so they're starting to send us back that data as well, and Les will take that and put that together too. Then we're going to actually go out into the community and do some focus groups. And so we anticipate that those focus groups will probably happen more spring time. And then we'll bring all of our data together. We're hoping to have our report finalized by December. I need to get that into the Iowa Department of Public Health by February.
December 2020?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, well, yes. Yep. So we will be working on that all this next year.
And how often do you do this again?
Every 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. We have another individual, Nancy France, who's also a retired ISU professor that is helping us with this process as well. So we are very fortunate that we are able to utilize ISU in that way. So I'll keep you updated as we go and let you know how things are progressing towards that. The other thing before Teresa talks, I just want to talk a minute about the implementation in target populations or that grant. I was actually approached by the Iowa Department of Public Health. This is kind of it seems to be pushed out in waves to different counties, and we were the second county or the second wave of counties. They had specific focuses. It could be whether it's heart disease or diabetes. We actually chose the diabetic route for diabetes. And so we were awarded $8,800. And I've been working with our diabetic center at Mary Greeley Medical Center and Thera Cox. And they're going to be able to, with these dollars, they're going to be able to really go and do maybe some lunch and learns with the clinics in Story County, the McFarland clinics, as well as Doran Clinic, and talk about their program, talk about diabetes prevention programs and self-management programs. Their goal would even to have some type of automatic referral process. So they don't quite have it all laid out yet, but as if, depending on what their lab work is or their history, those kinds of things, it would just be an automatic referral to our diabetic center at Mary Greeley. Also with this, they get an opportunity to enhance their education, and they will be going out and going to a diabetic summit. A couple of them will be able to attend that with these dollars, as well as doing some care coordination training. The last thing they will do then is they will provide a program in Story County, 8 to 12 individuals that will qualify, and again, just to work on diabetes prevention and do education and things with that group. So I think it'll be a nice enhancement for Story County in relationship to diabetes.
Did this answer your question?
It did. Thank you. Yep, thank you.
So on the public health side, we've been busy, obviously, giving lots of flu shots, promoting that, going out to different clinics and giving shots. And then also, we're just going to be starting to do school audits. As of October 1st, we have the okay to start doing that. So we're scheduling those and haven't done one yet, but we'll be starting that soon. And then we've been asked by other places to come and talk and present to them what our public health does and what the different things that we do. So we've done that. Sherry did that at Nevada Story County. What is that building? It's like their main building on Main Street in Nevada. Senior Center. Yeah, so she went there and talked to them about what public health does. I talked to a kinesiology class just last week about what public health does, and then I have coming up, I'm going to be talking to a couple assisted livings about flu, why you should get the flu shot, and ways to prevent injury during the winter months. They'd asked us to come and talk to them about that too, on tips that elderly can help do to prevent them getting hurt or injured in the winter months. So those are the main things that we're busy doing right now. And so, yeah.
Does public health, do you guys have like a Facebook page at all?
Yeah, it's under Mary Greeley.
Is it?
Yeah.
I only ask because, you know, I see on Facebook, especially since you're talking about flu shots and, you know, certain news outlets will put out, are you going to get a flu shot or not? And there's a lot of comments on there of, no, I'm not going to get it because, you know, I didn't get the flu until the one time I had the shot, or it's.
I know.
And I'm just wondering if there's, because social media is so prevalent, there's a way to kind of counter some of that.
And anytime we go to, like, we just went to an IDPH called the Governor's Conference, Sherry and I did, and they talk a lot about social media on some of the people that they have people that just follow that a lot just to help respond to those comments that you see people say or you understand. You see the need of education, I guess, because you see all those comments about from people that, like, they don't even understand. You know, they just need education. And we don't do that. I think it's just people, our community relations does the Facebook stuff for us. We don't put anything on ourselves, but some public health do.
But we do have an opportunity that we can do that. Actually, I just met with community relations in relationship to how can we get a little bit more education out there, not only for public health, but for some other things that we offer. And so we just have to give them the information. Our community relations department kind of likes to manage that. And definitely if there's things that are coming across that they feel like we should know about, they will let us do that. But I think you'll see some more of those kinds of things in the near future.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Any other questions?
Can we only serve citizens of Story County?
No. No, we can give. You mean as far as,
well,
I guess, what do you say?
Well, we had a child clinic, and we had a mother show up from Boone or Hardin County for a school check. Would we?
Well,
for the kids, would we, or immunizations, would we,
yeah,
send them back to
we
their
do,
county, or would we immunize the kids and give
yes,
them?
We do. We actually had Polk County, or actually a school, I think it was North Polk, that called us and asked if we could give some immunizations to a kid that couldn't go to school because Polk County was backed up by 2 weeks. They couldn't get him in. So, yeah, he came in. So we can do other counties if they need
I
to.
I had a question, and I didn't know what the
yeah,
term.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can.
It's always an interesting question about how much you should social media battle somebody when pure non-truths are coming out.
Right.
But a lot of people get their information from those, from social media, and so mm-hmm. it probably is a good idea, especially when it's a flagrant fallacy, like I got flu from the flu vaccine, which is not possible.
Right, and you hear that a lot.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw a site today, and that's all they kept saying, yeah. and I was like, mm-hmm. oh.
I know.
Yeah. So I, you know, that would be a good idea. I think that would be a real good idea if your public relations people can work on that. That'd
yeah,
be great.
That would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. We do that at McFarland. You know, they watch social media, and we get a notice if something shows up on social media that pertains to us or the clinic, like the pediatric clinic, and then they make a response.
Oh.
So they, yeah. But that's just the clinic and stuff. It's not mm-hmm. it's county-wise.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And YSS.
There we go.
Good afternoon. I already sent you a couple things, one of which was a 64-page Office of Drug Control Policy for Iowa strategic plan. I assume you have that memorized by now.
Yep.
And what I did do is giving you the last page, which is the last page of this, that talks about the funding information so that you have an idea as to where the money's going in Iowa and how that's being spent, how they are sort of organizing that. But you have sort of three different things here. Everything in yellow is about vaping. Everything in green is about pot. And the white page is where it overlaps. So back the bus up for just a second to give you an update of what we're doing at YSS. Currently, we're doing all the usual school stuff that we usually do. Because of the cut in funding by the Iowa Department of Public Health, we are not doing Project Alert as much as we did. We are doing all year one in the Ames schools, so there's somebody out there every day. Project Alert, for those of you who don't know, is a 13-session program that is usually done. We say first and second year can be done in sixth and seventh grade or seventh and eighth grade. In Ames, they do it in the seventh grade class. So that goes on, but we will not be doing second year, and those are usually done with eighth grade in Ames, and it's a four-session booster session, but our funding does not allow for that. We are doing the booster sessions in all the other county schools, but they're not getting the first year. We have yet to meet with Community and Family Resources, who did get the contract. They were supposed to do their assessment, and then we were going to sit down and see where the gaps were and what they were going to take over and what they haven't, but we've not got that phone call yet. So we don't know if they're picking up those services that we can no longer afford to do or not. That is yet to be revealed to us. But we are going to continue to do Too Good for Drugs, but our person who did that has left us, so we are currently doing interviews as we speak this afternoon. And, of course, we're still doing the other kinds of programming in the elementary. We're meeting with, I just finished a whole series of college students in our 110 classes, so Last week was Pot Week, and we spent a lot of time talking about that. That's a 1-2 punch where the first program with those classes is sort of all things drugs, heavy on binge drinking. What does that look like at the college level? It looks pretty healthy. And then the second one is all about marijuana. So we get a chance to talk to roughly 200 sort of freshman, sophomore students about that. And I'm meeting with the Health Promotion Club, which is going to be talking about vaping tonight. They are the youngsters who brought you the ordinance that eventually went through. Story and Johnson County, to my knowledge, are still the only ones who have the ban on that. But as you can see from the cover of Time magazine, vaping is alive and well, except for those 805 people to date who have the lung illness associated with it, the 13 people who have died from it, and the 77% of those people who were vaping THC, and that seems to be one of the culprits. You have an article about that. Okay. Speaking of vaping, I don't know if we had heavy on this the last time, but in Story County, our 11th graders, 24% of them are vaping in a 30-day period, and 38% of them have ever vaped. Sixth graders, it's just 1 and 2%, eighth grade, 5 and 10%. But at the 11th grade level, we have what I would consider to be a fairly healthy number of kids who are doing that on a regular basis. And of course, they're getting messages from everywhere that that's probably okay. There are 5 states now that have banned it. I would really like it if Iowa was one of them. The Health Promotion Club will go back to the legislature again. We're talking about that tonight. We contacted every single legislator last year and asked for their help to sponsor that bill, but we did not really get any leverage with that. And actually, that was the second year that they asked for that. So I think I would like to think that now with more coverage about vaping, they will be more receptive to that. I was just talking to my students this morning about how, because we were talking about marijuana and, you know, why is it legal and all this. And I said, well, you know, most people think that the war on drugs is about breaking down doors. But in fact, the better way to go is to put policies in place that just make it less likely that people can do that. And we know that for young people, the more they see something, the more they believe that it is less harmful. And I know that I've talked to you about the Monitoring the Future study before. But the Monitoring the Future study every year looks at what the perception of harm is for young people. And every time the perception of harm goes down, use always goes up, which is why you can predict the future on that, or disapproval. And if society is approving it, either through, you know, norms and legislation, it always goes down. In Iowa right now, about 5 years ago, the percent of Iowa kids who thought that marijuana was very harmful was 12%, and now it is 24%. So it has doubled in that amount of time. So it's no surprise that we might be seeing that. However, having said that, the use of marijuana by Story County kids has gone down, and significantly so. It was 13% in 2014, it is now 8.2% among 11th graders. So that's encouraging. But the vaping is up. And what they're vaping could easily be marijuana. So it's always a balancing act. But putting those kinds of policies in place that just don't make it easy, that don't enable, can make a significant difference. And legislation, any procedure, policy, any environmental strategy is helpful for that. So they'll be going back to the legislature and saying, now that you've seen that it's more of an epidemic, would you not cooperate with us and make it a statewide law to not be able to do it in public? That makes a difference. If you can't see it in public, you are less likely to think that it is the norm. And that alone is not going to do it, but that is one piece in the puzzle. So comments, questions, so answers, rebuttals.
The vaping thing.
Yes.
So did I hear that right? You're going to the state legislature?
We sent them letters last year, every single person, and said, would you please tack this onto the Smoke-Free Air Act, or, you know, words to that effect, that would not be tough, that Story County has done this. We felt like we've had some good results. Does that mean that no one is vaping in public? No. I just accosted a group of kids at a football game the other day, walked right into the middle of this group of boys and said, really, you're doing this in public? You know that there's a whole policy for Iowa State alone and the Story County ordinance. There's a $200 fine. You don't want to get in the middle of that, do you? And he went, no. So I don't know if that cured him initially, but I love doing that.
I was going to say, people must love you at parties.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty much a buzzkill. But anyway, so yeah, they'll be writing letters again and just saying, you know, could you support us with this?
I'll let you know they had a grand rounds on medical cannabis last week, and I didn't go because I was doing charts, but I did look at some of the summary of it and talk to people. And the interesting thing this person brought up was that the data is terrible from medical cannabis. There's like 5 or 6 studies that are really poorly powered and everything that point to any type of possible use. And the thing is that you're stymied from studying it, because federally it's still a Schedule I drug. It's really, 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 really hard to get a license to study a Schedule I drug.
And yet there is a lot of research that is done. It's just not done here.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of research in France and England,
right. Yeah.
New Zealand, Australia. So
exactly.
There is a lot of research. And it's interesting to me, you know, when I first started looking at this, it was about 18 years ago, starting studying this in a big way. And just recently I read something that's like, oh, this brand new study. I thought, I've known about that for a long time. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they're redoing some of those studies or they didn't pay attention in the first place, but it's like, who didn't know that?
It's a very interesting issue. But I wish, well, I can't do it. They need to make it a Schedule II drug. That's what they need to do. Make it a Schedule II drug, and then it can be studied. And we can find out what it does and what it doesn't do. But
so Denise, were you saying that, Denise, were you saying that, so for the vaping, that you're just going to try to get it so it's not utilized in public versus
right,
trying to go
there's
for
a ban for
ban.
All public spaces, like there is with tobacco?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, and part of that is none of the devices, I mean, just full stop, none of the devices are really regulated. They are notorious for breaking. If you go to a restaurant and it breaks on your table, nicotine is clear. If that's not disinfected with something like Clorox, you and your child can come in, the next thing you know, it's on their hands. And you would never know it until you have to take them to the ER, because it's very poisonous. So, I mean, when was the last time you went into a restaurant? It looked like it had been cleared, but you can feel still feel the sticky Pepsi on the table. So you are an unwitting victim of that. But even the vape is not handy. You know, you don't want to be breathing that under any circumstances. And kids think it's harmless. They just think it's a water vapor. It's an aerosol vapor. And if you say that to them, it's like, would you breathe in hairspray? Well, no. Well, this is not unlike that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I find it very interesting that they ban it on airplanes. They ban it in airports. They already have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we just don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. There are states that have had a public ban for years. When I first started doing, you know, looking at this 5 years ago, I talked to people in New Jersey, Utah, North Dakota. They'd already had that in place. There are whole countries that have this in place. This is not that tough, I wouldn't think. I think it would, you know, you hold these truths to be self-evident. Anyway, we're unbiased. There's that.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Story County Environmental Health.
The geothermal wells being drilled over at the Ames High School. Huge, muddy project. One of the biggest problems with large geothermal projects like that is the mud and how to get rid of it. So they have to have a plan and contain it, and certainly not put it down the the storm sewers, which some folks have been known to do. As a matter of fact, this building, when they did the geothermals, they were caught putting it down the storm sewer and had to basically vacuum it out. So something to keep an eye on. And Kathy notifies the city of Ames or whatever city it's being done in that this is happening in their community, and to help keep an eye on it so it doesn't go down the storm drain. So since July 1, we've done 3 well plugging, 0 cisterns, 1 rehab, and 34 water samples. Grants to counties, we've gotten the same amount again, $31,000. And then wells permitted, 4 water supply, which is really high, 3 of those being the Hog CAFOs, 5 geothermal, and 1 other. I'll have to have Kathy kind of fill us in on this one here. So Tullamore Glen, they built it with several wells to avoid being under DNR authority. And so one of the production wells here is considered a private well, and they've had some bacteria issues. So there's been quite a few visits out. And so the community there, some of them are thinking of going to reverse osmosis treatment.
They don't quite know. They're still exploring different options because they have chlorinated a few times and they can't get the bacteria out, but is still working with the driller and trying to figure out if, and some people already have the reverse osmosis, but they're talking about maybe looking at ultraviolet.
Okay. And that's pretty tough to sell a house with
quite a few houses UV. On that one well. I believe it's the one in yellow up there.
I think
all
so too.
All those houses, that are on, all those lots are on that one well.
Yeah. And we've had issues before with these wells, and it finally works its way out, but possibly there's impact from the blasting from the mine up north, something like that. Hard to say. But so anyway, this has just kind of been on our radar and a water testing burden lately that Kathy and Matt have been doing. Kathy went.
Where's the call form coming from?
Well, it's not E. coli, so it's call form. So it's basically an indicator. So it could be a speck of dirt. It could be. You know, if you're getting a low pressure in the line, it could be sucking dirt in and the test is picking it up. It could be when you have several houses on one well, you could have somebody doing some work, plumbing work, and they don't shock it, so you're introducing bacteria when you, you know, break the line, something like that. You're the plumber, Mark.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because it's got to be coming from someplace. And,
yep. Well, it could be a cracked well casing.
Yeah.
It could be the lines. It could be people doing plumbing. I mean, sky's the limit on that. That's why it's tough when you have several houses on one well. It's just really hard to track it down. If you have any ideas, we're welcome.
I don't think they have backflow preventers on each house either.
No.
Probably.
Nope. Never seen them. And then when Reward's well company in Nevada here went out of business by his choice, he had all sorts of history on the wells that he and his dad drilled, and his dad's dad, I think it was. And so he brought them in, and Kathy went through and scanned the ones. Those include other counties that the driller has worked on. So we captured his history information on those cards and have attached it to the wells that we can. So that helps a little bit.
What is in that history, like the what the water was analyzed like?
Or? Well, no, more
how
like
deep
how deep they are.
Logging, I mean not logs, and then depth of the pump, where the pump was set, stuff like that, size of the pump. Did it have
high the water come up into the well casing and gallons per minute it pumps down and things like that.
Okay. Yeah. So, but no water quality testing.
Okay.
They just do kind of real basic ones anyway, hardness and that. Yeah. But yeah, good thought. I see what where you're going. So it was a lot of work and it's really valuable information to have. And I'm going backwards. Okay. So let's see. Septics for calendar year 2019. We've done 63, which is low, and we've done 79 inspections. pool, tattoo tanning. Matt did initial inspections for Comfort Inn and Mortenson Heights with the state engineer. No action on tattoo, and then we did one written exam for the tanning manager.
Which was a new place. However, we couldn't do the inspection because it was after the contract ran out. But at least the operator is came in and took the exam and everything.
So complaints.
Can I ask a question about tanning? It might be the legislature. It doesn't have to be a law, but do those tanning operators, do they require people under 18 to get a notice from their parents?
No.
No, it's not. It's
not required.
I've tried.
It's interesting because you think that they would want to. You think that would make a lot of legal sense to do that.
But I think their clientele, they have a large percentage of clientele that might be under 18.
Yeah, so they would lose business.
The places do not want that going into effect.
Well, good tattoo parlors have certain regulations that they personally do but are not legislated. Mm-hmm. You know, like a reputable tattoo parlor will not tattoo you when you're drunk. You know, but there's no legislation that says that. But they don't tan.
But that's
okay. Just curious.
Yeah.
Okay,
One question about the tanning exam that was administered.
Uh-huh.
Who administers that exam?
We do.
Oh, you do.
And we charge what? $20?
$25. It's a state exam that we get from the state. There's a couple of different versions. And they have a booklet. It's an open book exam, but they have a booklet with all the information in it that they have to study, and they can bring in and take the exam.
It's a pretty well written test, don't you agree?
Yeah, it covers a lot of.
Yeah.
Things. Okay.
So complaints: open burning of cleared trees on construction sites. I've got some calls on that. And then mold in an apartment in Gilbert, dumping concrete in a storm drain, chicken manure stockpiled, open burning cleared trees twice. So called and talked to him, said, can't do that. He said, okay, I get it. I'm so sorry. Went out there 3 days later, so we called him again. And then I turned him into DNR, and they called him, but I think he gets it now.
That's my question.
What?
You can't burn trees after that?
So when you clear, think of it, if you have a subdivision and you clear a whole ton of trees and you grub the area, and then if you're within a quarter mile of a resident, you cannot burn them there. If you have you can burn the landscape from the property that it's grown on, you can burn that. So this is kind of a little twist on that rule. You could probably say you're doing hot dogs big time or something like that. I don't know. But, so it's kind of an odd fine line. But these guys clearly, took out a ton of trees, and they had just a huge fire going and smoldering for days and days. And neighbors complained. It was up Skycrest area. And just complained that the air quality, they couldn't even go outside for several days. So then the other two that I came upon, one was burnt, but it was out because of the rain. So I just let them know the regulations, because I could see where it would be confusing where you could or could not do it. But they don't even have a waiver for if you're, if all the neighbors sign off saying it's okay. This is DNR, this is not us. You still can't get a waiver for burning those trees. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then bats in an apartment. And then yesterday I got more mold down in Kelly.
In town.
Conceptual reviews for Great Minor Subdivision, Snell Minor Subdivision, Friend Variance, Story County Animal Control Tower. Trainings and meetings. We had the IPERS come in. They were very helpful to us people getting long in the tooth. And what else? Oh, IDPH quarterly, listen to that. We were hoping to get more information on the tanning program, but they didn't come forward with any additional information. And Loris and I went to the pigs, producers, and pork. Okay, so I'll probably depend on Matt for this slide. So data management. Our department and Stephanie and the IT department had a meeting because for data management for our department. What we call PIP is our software that it uses Microsoft Access. Matt wrote the program. It's a great program. It sorts the materials, and then also it spits out permits and things like that. It's a great program. But if you put the lat long in for a well or a septic, those points come up on the GIS map overlaid on the aerial, so you can. It's just really a helpful tool for us for planning and foreseeing, you know, setbacks on things like that. A visual representation of our data. So, in a few years, Story County is going to switch over their GIS to ArcMap GIS. Wait, do I have that right? Over to what is it called? ArcPro.
ArcPro. ArcMap, and it'll go to ArcPro.
ArcPro. Okay. And so Matt is being proactive and wanting to switch over, get a SQL to be able to manage that. And if we can't do that, then hire a software company to take the PIP program and write it and support it. IT doesn't want to support any homemade software. Is that correct? Does that sound right? So the options is to keep PIP and go with SQL, and we haven't had any dollar signs talked about there, or purchase software. And that is IT's preference if we purchase software. Both of these options, well, let's see, SQL, that's less expensive, Matt, than the software.
Sure exactly. Outright, because it'd be a license would be spread out through the years, where there's going to be an upfront cost if we have somebody write the software. That big lump sum, whereas the license for the SQL Server be
spread out over the years. Yeah, okay. So we're kind of at a little bit of a crossroads here. Budget review is coming up, and so we'll talk about maybe putting in money over a three-year period, or in my preference, go for it, just get it done. But I don't know how the county budget sits right now, so we'll have some negotiations on that. And that'll be the budget will be discussed with the Board of Health the next meeting that we have. Did you have anything more you wanted to add to that, Matt? And so, do you have a preference of which way we go?
Have it done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If the
to the tune of around $100,000, dollar sign.
To take what I have for somebody else to write it, it would probably cost around $100,000.
Yeah, it is.
Because there's a lot to it, and for us not to have somebody, you know, we can't just buy a canned version like P&D just did. They were able to find something that suited their needs, whereas we already have something in place that does exactly what we want, and we don't want to step back to where we're doing more work than we already are, like entering data and stuff. So
right.
It's going to be, it's a rough estimate, but probably close to $100,000.
Interesting.
So what happens if we don't do anything? If we keep what we have?
We can keep what we have. It won't integrate with our GIS software the way it does now in probably 5 years when we're forced to go to the ArcPro.
And data isn't worth collecting if you can't use it.
Yeah.
So we have to do one of these two.
Something. If we just keep what we have now, something would have to be done in the future to make our data work with the new GIS software. So there would be somebody out there would have to do something to make it work. So you're paying for that no matter what.
And why is it required to go to ArcPro?
Good question.
The company that makes it is Esri, and they are phasing out the, it's a antiquated software. It runs on 32-bit and only uses 4 meg of RAM. So the Pro is 64-bit and uses as much RAM in your computer as you can throw at it. So it's a much more robust piece of software that that will be phased out probably within 5 years. So, and it doesn't play nice with Microsoft Access, so our data can't just go right to it.
And all the data that you have so far are transferred easily into this new program, or?
For the GIS, or like if we hire somebody to write something.
To do, somebody will do that.
And not unless they do one of those options.
Yeah, if we hire somebody to write something, the way that I made PIP is you don't even need PIP to look at like all the documents and everything. Everything's listed by the file name for the PDF is the parcel number and whether it's septic and the permit number. So you could look at the hard drive and be able to tell what each one of those files are without using PIP. But PIP also does, you know, it does the calculations, not only just document management, it also does, it writes the permits, it keeps your notes, it keeps your email. There's so much more to it, but to get the data that's in the tables for the database and the documents for somebody to write, it's easy to transfer over to something new. Does that make sense?
Not really. I'm sorry. Okay. But it sounds like if we don't do this, we'll lose that information.
No, we won't lose anything.
Oh, okay.
No, we would just lose the benefit of
the
mapping.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And it's something, you know, I'm not going to be alive forever to keep access, you know, like Margaret always uses. If I ever see Margaret in a bus, I'm running.
If he gets run over by the bus, because that's not very realistic. But that we use that, you know, what would happen to Pip if he got run over by a bus that I was driving, for example. And is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Okay. But then also you pointed out that somebody, a firm, a company that you would hire, they go out of business also. They get run over by a bus. So, you know, it's a crapshoot sometimes. So it's just a tricky decision and very expensive both ways, but we know something coming down the pipe will have to do something. But this is just a FYI for now, and we'll probably bring more information to you, hopefully price tags,
okay,
next meeting. Okay?
Great.
Other stuff we're doing. Huge septic installation complaint. People lawyered up, both sides, time of transfer. We're not part of that complaint, but back and forth they are, and they're trying to involve us. Very common that they want us drawn into legal things. Let's see, contacted the overdue binding agreements, and we did the KUPCOG document review. ISU poultry facility, and then also their teaching facility. They're adding 2 or 3 more septic systems for their new things going in their teaching units. We finalized the Peterson Mound time of transfer issue. I replaced soil probe parts when one of my contractors jumped on it. Mound troubleshooting again, having a lot of mound problems lately, and part of it is because of the wet weather. Hickory Grove, I was trying to help them come up with some solutions, and it all boils down to with the dump station from the RVs that can be not so bad or super bad toxic stuff, and it could possibly kill a septic system, so including like Advantix and Cocos, things like that. So Mike Cox said that maybe come January he will go back
to the table and talk to Colo about possibly pumping to their lagoons and take care of it that way. Because we are, we're just between a rock and a hard spot on that. If we went with the lagoons, we will be within 10,000 feet of a house, and so you have to get their permission to do that. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't sign off on lagoons being built by my house. So it's just a really tricky thing, but we do need to do something about the Hickory Grove Lagoon. It's leaking and not treating the wastewater like it should. That's a county-owned park, so we have to do something. And then with EOC, we switched Matt to GIS instead of 11. Is that me? Sorry. Thought I had that turned off. Septic ordinance update. So mostly been emailing back and forth with Ethan. And so the concepts that are still in but not definitely in, I'll start with an easy one. There's a site evaluation to be conducted by a soils professional. So that's in. Requiring maintenance every 5 years. That's still in. We did get the thumbs up from DNR saying that they wish that they could do it at a state level. And they even gave us recommendations on what to add to that regulation. So that was kind of a big one. Now the third one, the top one there, I wanted to do septic disclosure. So if you came in and got a permit for building a wing onto a building or something like that, or a fence or anything like that, we wanted you to disclose the septic information, and that was a firm no, that legal does not want to support that. So that's no. Okay, so that part is out, and what I want to put in is just when there's a CUP or a business that comes in, because that always changes the water use. So the whole disclosure thing is out, except hopefully adding when you get a CUP or a home business permit, we get to look at their water use and see if they need additional septic to handle that extra burden. The things that are out, disclosure requirement for septic when any county application is due, so that's what I just said, and then requiring sampling of discharging systems every 5 years, that's out. Legal doesn't think that they can support that through legal terms. So I was hoping to have a meeting by now, but it just didn't work out, so hopefully stakeholders will meet in a next month or so. People will be out of the field probably because of the weather and more available to meet.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Requiring sampling of discharging systems every 5 years. That's out now. Why was that done or required before?
Well, it wasn't. I was just kind of adding it to the list of things we could do to, you know, for water quality protection. Mm-hmm. And they said
it's not necessary.
Yeah.
Why don't they think we can have that in there?
Well, I don't know, really. I don't know.
I mean, that's one of the most important things. So you're saying our legal?
Yes, Story County.
We can inspect the septic systems for 5 years.
Yeah, the discharging, like the sand filters.
Checking the discharge is not part of the...
Well, we can, but who pays for it? You know, that's the thing. So discharging systems like COCOs or Advantix, Mark, that has that maintenance contract. So those are, I'm not worried about one bit. It's the sand filters, the old sand filters that are probably malfunctioning by now. You know, they have to get samples when they sell. So, you know, at least there's that safety net there.
We just can't automatically do it every 5 years.
Correct, according to this, So, okay, so now a beacon update. So last time, I think it was just last time we met, we talked about $1,000 for Snyder to update this beacon thing. So now we have septic and well information available. And so when you go and do a property search, you look up your own, it'll tell you, you know, when your septic was installed, the type of system, and the system size based on bedrooms, okay? And then well information if it's available, geothermal or water, and whether or not you need a maintenance contract on that. So this was good because it matched up. So above, the assessor talks about there being five bedrooms, and our septic system is sized for five bedrooms, so it all worked out nicely. But there are other situations, boy, you can't see that, sorry, where the bedrooms for the septic sizing is less than the number of bedrooms listed for Beacon. So this way, the realtors can at least go there, compare, and see what's going on. They should be limited, selling the properties, they should be limited to the size of the septic system, not, you know, not what the owner wants to sell it for.
Well, the bedroom, saying how many bedrooms.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So that's that. So it worked out.
You live out in the country, right?
No, I live in town.
Oh, shoot. I thought we'd look up Dr. Kluge's place in the country. So, sorry.
And then, as requested, the last meeting, we've started doing the CAFO baseline quality testing. So BOD, E. coli, and ammonia goes to the lab. And then the rest of that list is a field test kit supplied by the Iowa Water that's now defunct, but I still have my old kit, and so you just get new chemicals and stuff for the testing. And
how much does each of those testing samples cost?
Okay, so let's see. I already forget. 35, 40. I would say around 60 to 70 for the lab.
Okay.
Yep. And and for the, I talked just today, Scott Henry with the Longview pork, no hogs in yet, but probably any day now for Richland 10. We'll be getting the new hogs in. Any questions?
No, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. So that's the end of our agenda. So now comments. Do we have any comments from staff? Staff? Comments? Nope. Okay. Any board comments? Molly? Nope. Anything? John?
Nope.
The only comment I have is that Margaret brought up a very good point about talking about these meetings, and one of the things that she suggested, and I wonder how you guys feel about this, is trying to get a presentation when we have our meetings by something that has to do with public health that's not who we usually hear. Not that you're not interesting, okay? But say we bring somebody in who talks about the burning plant in Ames, you know, and how that affects the environment or troubles they're having with that. I don't know.
Or restaurant inspector, something like that.
Yeah. Something that's just a little bit different and just maybe give a 5-minute talk. So it would be more of an education thing about us, and we would know more about what's going on. Okay. All right.
So let me know if you have ideas, or let Stephanie know. She can.
Okay.
I'm booked.
Yeah. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about that idea. Okay.
Sounds good.
So maybe by the first part of the year, we'll get something organized. All right, that's all I have to say, except for, again, thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Lisa, I think you're going to add a lot to this board, especially with your legislation.
Thank you.
Legislator experience, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark?
I just want to thank Denise for the chocolates.
Yeah.
Oh, it was you? Oh, thank you very much. Yes, Denise. Thank you.
Okay. You should give a talk at one of her... Her
club.
Yeah.
Oh,
she hands out buckets of candy. Yeah, John's done that.
But any of you could come
and
check.
I have nothing else.
No, just thank you all for your presentations today.
Okay. All right. So, meeting's adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.